Welcome to the Everything Coworking Podcast, where you learn what you need to know about how the world wants to work. And now your host, coworking space owner and trend expert, Jamie Russo.
Welcome to the Everything Coworking Podcast, episode number 77. This is Jamie Russo. I own a coworking space in Palo Alto, California. I'm the executive director of the Global Workspace Association and the host of the Everything Coworking Podcast. This week's episode is brought to you by the Global Workspace Association. The first early bird deadline for the Flex Office Conference in September in Austin is this Friday, May 25th. If you are in the shared workspace industry, you must not miss this event. And since you must not miss it, why pay more for your ticket than absolutely necessary? Go get the early bird pricing at www.flexofficeconference.com. And now for today's interview. Thank you for joining us today. I'm really excited about today's guest, Garrett Tishy. He is the founder and owner of a co-working space in Charlotte. I will let him talk about the name and the origin and how to pronounce it momentarily. He is a strong advocate for Charlotte and well known for his natural ability to build diverse and inclusive communities of professionals, both online and in person. And I would imagine that's what drew him into co-working, and he's going to share that with us shortly. So before founding his co-working space, he was the owner of a creative digital marketing agency. And this, I think, gives him a unique leg up on applying marketing concepts to local businesses, such as co-working spaces. So Garrett facilitated a marketing breakout session at a recent industry event, and his expertise and perspective drew me in immediately. So I accosted him in the hallway afterwards and asked him to be a guest on the podcast and help other owners be better marketers. So Garrett, thank you for joining me today and for not minding that I accosted you and being a guest. You were pretty amenable. So
we're, thank you. Thanks for doing that. And thanks for having me on. I'm always excited to talk about co-working.
Yeah, although you're at home because it's 7 o'clock for you instead of at your podcast studio. I almost tempted Garrett with coming down. He's one of the few operators who has a podcast studio in his space.
Yes.
Yeah, you'll have to tell us about that. Yeah. So, absolutely. Okay, so first we're going to start with tell us about, before we even get into your background, or your background probably plays into this a little bit, but what was your co-working moment, the moment when you knew you had to start a co-working space?
Sure. So back, you had talked a little bit, I owned a creative marketing agency. When we quit, I worked for a larger 70 person organization, quit our jobs to start the marketing agency Ready at Seven. And very quickly, noticed working from home was bad for our mental health. It was a two-person team, running, but that idea of waking up and not going to work didn't really work well for us as a team or as a business. So we, within 2 weeks of being on our own and running Ready at Seven, we ended up actually working in a co-working space called At 809, and it was kind of one of Charlotte's only, at the time, only independently owned co-working spaces. Okay. It was way ahead of its time. We were there for about a year as Ready at Seven and started to really appreciate the personal and professional benefits that for me as an extrovert, I loved just having humans around. There's a derived energy. We had an office there, but we worked in the open space, but it was a small community. There was only about 20 people that worked out of the space on the regular. That was between offices and open co-working. The owners of the space, it was more of a side thing. They had a larger company and had extra space, so they called it co-working. And eventually, I just was like, we can do this, right? Like, we can do this. Like, what happens if somebody just cared a little bit? Like, just made it their focus and put everything into it. Because it's nobody's caring really right now. And
It is different when you're doing something else and making it a side thing, right? The whole sort of focus, right? The thing you focus on is the best thing. Yeah.
Absolutely. So it's a weird like coincidence that within like 2 weeks of this happening, like this kind of like, we could do co-working, we should do it. The space literally next door, 3,000 square feet, became available, up for lease. And the bar to get in was shruggable. The marketing company was doing well. They were like, you can pay $10 a square foot. We're not going to give you any TI. Here's the 3,000 square feet. And you only have to sign a year lease. So like, what's the worst that could happen? It was a very shruggable moment. Like, what happens if we jump into this 3,000 square feet? We care. We give it an incredible brand. We work hard and we create something that we love. And maybe people will care. And like 2 weeks later, we signed the lease. A month later, we moved in. 2 months later, we opened the doors. Like, all of this happened in this incredibly fast timeline. It was just, what happens if we try and just put a little bit of effort into it? And the bar was low. We were doing well, and the rent was low, and I'm only signing a year lease. You do the math. You're like, well, if we fail, we're only burning this much cash. So like, go. So that's how it started, and it worked. It worked.
So did you
borrow
the members from the original space?
No. That was an interesting thing. And I'm 100% opposed to burning bridges. I think your network and who people see you as, like, it is your thing. We only have, your reputation, especially in a city like Charlotte, where it's small and everybody, as a fast growing city, that's, close to, one of the fastest growing cities, you're still so small, and it still catches me off guard to this day. So we didn't burn those bridges, and we had an agreement. We said to 809 and Mark and the team, we're just like, hey, we're going to do this, and we love you guys, and we're hoping to continue the mission, but we just want to give this a shot on our own. We'll not touch your members. And we didn't. And we grew a brand that was strong and bold and loud. And it turned out we gained traction. We gained members, and eventually, it was about 3 months later, we went back to them and just asked to purchase them because we shared a wall.
Yep.
We said, hey, it looks like you guys don't really want to do this, and we really want to do it.
Yep.
And the only way for us to scale, and actually when I think about, as I'm telling this story, I'm going like, if Mark had said no, that might have been the end of my co-working journey right then and there. We cannot scale within that location.
Yep.
So would I have ever? And he agreed to it. And he was actually pretty proud of us and the work that we had done. And we promised to share and continue the vision he originally had, but just didn't have the time to fulfill.
Put into it. Yeah.
He ended up, he agreed to it, which was incredible. And we ended up, that was our first full location, right under 10,000 square feet, 18 offices, bunch of meeting space, and a lot of open co-working. And it kind of put us on the map as a major player in the market.
That's a great end to that, or a great beginning, I guess, to your story.
Yeah.
Also just a good lesson. If you had treated Mark differently from the get-go, then that may not have been an option. So,
absolutely.
So tell us about the brand that you've built and the unusual name and where that came from and kind of your journey before we dive. We'll get to the marketing stuff because I know that's what, but I think, people are very curious about operators and their journeys. So let's start there.
Absolutely. So the marketing company Ready at Seven, when we quit our jobs, we quit our corporate job we were so unhappy with because we hated the rules and we hated the personality,
we hated all
these things. And the funniest thing about it is we went and built a brand that was nearly identical to the company we quit. We were so scared. Like we weren't scared to take the leap, but we were scared to create something that wasn't the norm.
Totally.
What happens, can a professional marketing services company say, curse words or be bold or be slightly, just have these, Huga has at times sexual undertones to some of its, you can read between the lines as much or as little as you want.
Totally. Yeah. But
it's
you, so, and it's unique.
Would
and so
somebody,
people who see it know it, right? They know if they're a fit or not. And that's
what
you want.
But would somebody pay $10,000 a month to a marketing company for this? Like, did we come off as childish instead of professional? So we built literally the same company. Mm-hmm. So when we started Hugo, when we sat down and said, like, what is co-working, our co-working space going to be? We, Kayla, my partner who started Hugo with me, we made a vow to each other that we would create a space that we wanted to be at. And if nobody cares, that's fine. And again, we had the luxury of having such a low bar to get in that it was, what was the worst that could happen? Nobody would like it. Nobody would appreciate our humor or our personality.
Yep.
But it turns out they did. it worked. If I could go back and tell myself that the name Hugo, which nobody can spell and nobody can say, and people are even scared to try, would be almost one of our best marketing tactics. Is this incredibly difficult but memorable word? Mm-hmm. I couldn't guess it. So I remember searching Google with Kayla and going, let's just look for words that don't translate to English. Let's just find words with meaning, but they're just, and it was between this and five, there were five total words, and I can only remember one of the other ones, and it was tortle, T-O-R-T-L-E. We didn't choose that one for a very specific, actually, that was the one I wanted. But if you Urban Dictionary tortle, it has a pretty derogatory.
Yeah.
No. So we opted for Hygge, because the idea of, one, it's a Danish word, and the Danes are so considered the happiest people in the world.
Right.
And the idea of creating a space, Hygge means, the mental state of well-being, that comfortable, cozy feeling within space. And for us, if we can create that in a co-working space where you actually do your job, that seemed to align with the with our vision. And it was cool, and we ran with it.
So tell us, so first base, 3,000 square feet expanded, you got to about 10. Where are you today?
Yes. So first location right under 10. Second location, we moved just 3 miles down the road to the west side of Charlotte, and it was about 8,000 square feet, our smallest location, and probably least optimal, I guess, from a floor plan standpoint. But it gave us got a really good deal to push into that space, and the bar was low, and it was more of a test, like, what happens if we take more space? Like, can we
3 miles down the road?
I think we have demand. So I feel like we're turning people away for office space and different meeting space and amenities. So let's just see what happens. And then it went really well, and we filled within 2 months. We had all our offices filled, we're covering our rent, and we had built the podcast studio in that location as well. So it garnered a lot of attention right off the bat. That was December of we opened October 20. Yeah, so it was about a year later. We opened Remount, or we call it Remount, the West Charlotte location. And then the same month that we opened Remount, our second location, I had the opportunity to go look at a new development project called Camp North End. That was basically 70 acres of abandoned warehouses. And it was terrifying. It was like Terminus from Walking Dead, like people go there to die. Hmm. And I was shared in this vision by developers and a friend of mine who is the community manager for that whole project.
Okay.
And they were like, believe in us, this is going to be a thing. It's going to be a hub. It's going to be this. We want you to do co-working here. Come look at this building. 10,000 square feet. It's got office build out. It needs to be clean and given some personality, but we think we want you here. Like we think you would kill it here. Mm-hmm. And it took me, I ended up, we opened December in Remount and kind of just mulled that over almost all the way till April, where I kept going back because I had access because my friend worked there. I kept touring the space and looking at it, and I had to bring my designer through, and I was just like, I don't know if we could do this. Like the space was disgusting.
You're trying to listen to the little voice, like, is this going to work? is this not going to work?
Yeah. And my designer, Tamara, who's incredible, and as we, I wouldn't build a location without her, was just like, we can do this. Like, you know, we're going to have to work, but I think we can.
She could see it.
It fits in your vision. It fits in the spaces you create. It's in a neighborhood that you want to be in. Just go. Let's do it. So I was actually sitting on the beach in the Virgin Gorda, and I got an email from Damon, who runs that project. He's the owner of all of it. And he was like, sir, you in? Like, come on. And I was just like, screw it. I'm in. Let's do this. No, like, whatever. And it was scary. But yeah, that location is our third and last currently. 10,000 square feet, 22 offices, a ton of meeting space. It's beautiful. It's so cool to have transformed what was Rite Aid's old corporate office into something that I consider a showpiece. So
awesome. And when did that one open?
Almost a year ago. It'll be a year in June. So we opened June 1.
In terms of expansion, you've been moving. I mean, that's not a trivial amount of work to have done in a few years.
Yeah, we have demand, and we're actually, I've probably looked at 25 buildings in the last, since January, I probably looked at 25 buildings.
Yep.
And I'm pretty picky, and my real estate guy is actually impressed with my patience. He says it all the time. He's like, you know, in most cases I would be frustrated, but I love how you're so thoughtful. Like, and we've been close to almost pulling the trigger on more, but I believe, I don't know. I got a good gut feeling when I walk into certain space, and I'm getting better at figuring that out. So we got things on the horizon. I think we'll scale again in the next, I think we'll definitely have four locations in the next year, within Charlotte.
Yeah, which is, I mean, it's great because, right to your point, not a huge place, but it's absorbing your supply and just an indicator of what's happening out there. And the patience is amazing because I talk to so many operators who I think, right, they have a timeline in mind, and so they will find a space that fits their timeline. And also, I think it's when it's your first space, you don't know exactly what you're looking for, and so you get impatient and you kind of do it. So.
Yeah. And I think we've had, I should say, like, Ready at Seven did well enough that we had the initial capital to make these things happen.
Yeah.
You know, we're self-funded. We have no loans. We have close to nothing on credit cards. We have no debt. We basically fund every location with the last location.
Which is not always easy definitely to do. So you got some things right from the get-go.
We're going to talk about marketing here at some point, but it's something that I talk to a lot of spaces, and I you can make money doing this. But we've just, we at least had the low bar up front. We had a lot of money from the marketing company that gave us, you know, we spent $28K renovating the 3,000 square feet, and we did all the work ourselves, painting and, I built, you know, 40 chairs from IKEA. Kill me now.
Right.
You know, do I do that stuff now? Like, no, I didn't build a single piece of furniture for the new Hugos, but we did well enough, and we've been doing well enough that we can sustain having people paint walls and all that stuff. So.
Yep. But you're also creating spaces. I mean, in a 10,000 square foot floor plan with a good mix of offices and meeting rooms and not just open space is a good business model. So you're making some good decisions there as well.
Absolutely.
Okay. So before we jump into the marketing piece, what's your favorite thing today about running a co-working space?
Sure. So my background in Charlotte is, and really just, this doesn't stem pre really much co-working. But there is, it's probably pretty cliche to say, but I love being around people. So I'm a big extrovert. I'm a big fan of education, and at soon to be 35 years old, I've done school, I've dropped out of school, I've went to school, I've got degrees, I've got multiple degrees, I got all these things. And I find that the best way to learn and the best way to better yourself is to surround yourself with people doing things that are nothing like what you do. What happens if we are all okay with engaging with people that aren't like us? Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's why I absolutely love what we've created at Huga. I look at co-working spaces creating niche, like they are like, we're going to be very specifically for this. And I go, that's so counter to how I believe these spaces should run. Like-mindedness in industry and things like that. There's nothing to, like, I don't want to be surrounded by marketing people. I want to be surrounded by
right.
nonprofits and startups and entrepreneurs and people that are just doing the weirdest things. I have a guy that manages alligator feed for an alligator farm, and it's just
wow.
so fascinating. Like that's one of my favorite jobs that somebody has at Huga. Like he just manages feeds, because if you don't feed alligators exactly at the right time every day, they'll die. They have a wild, just a fascinating thing for farming of alligators. Whether you agree with that as a practice or not,
right.
It's still very, I don't know, it's so weird. Like that guy worked at Huga.
And you, right. When would you never, right, encounter someone like that otherwise?
So, the people stuff it's huge. We do a monthly event called Zero Day. It's kind of our main Huga community event, and the 5 to 6 members grab 10 minutes. They talk about anything they want. And each and every month we've been doing it since December now. And this last one, we just did last Friday, and you had, you know, 3 Techstars startups that were in Austin most recently talk about living together, 'cause they all moved in. They're all Huga members that actually got into the program. Then you had someone talking about self-awareness and, getting over their, being an introvert and being a part of a community like co-working. Mm-hmm. And we had Emily Haynes, who's a tax person. She does like expat taxes for people in Germany. Mm-hmm. And it turns out she was also a neurologist and studied HIV's effect on human brain cells. And she's super nerdy for it. Nobody knew this.
Right.
She is like Miss Tax Person. She has a dog that comes to the space. But she spent 10 minutes nerding out about how much she loves this part of her life that she has nothing to do with anymore. It's just this piece of her. She can't do it. She doesn't do it. She kind of dropped out of it all. I don't know. This stuff just fascinates me. And I love when people start to be open to just hearing those conversations. It gets me really, really, really hyped.
And when people will talk about those things that not everybody knows, because you, it's like one of my sort of cliche, like the bring your whole self to work thing. Like when you work for a big company, you sort of have to bring your work self to work, and you don't get to uncover some of those things. But you're asking people to let it all out.
Well, I never understood the question. I built a reputation on this in Charlotte. Like, stop asking people what they do.
Mm-hmm.
What do you do? I'm in marketing. Cool. That's the end of that conversation. What are you passionate about? And it's unbelievable how what people do is actually usually very different than what they are incredibly passionate about. And you elicit such a different response when you just ask people what they care about versus what they do. I love it. And I have the luxury of actually doing what I'm passionate about. Like I hang out with cool people all day and it's pretty awesome. So people.
Yeah. So I wanted to ask this question because I think operators like this one too. Last question before we talk about marketing. So it sounds like you were a little more in the camp of like, let's just try this, not super freaked out about anything, but if there was something that you were afraid of when you first opened your space, what was it and how did it turn out?
I don't know. We opened right in the midst of holiday season, 2 locations. The first one came right in running into November, and we actually opened the second one running into December.
Yeah.
So like 2
Most
months,
people would
which
be
I can
clear of that. Yeah.
Yeah. It's co-working dead zone. Like everybody's traveling. Yeah. It's holidays. It's a bad, like January through April. Great. Summer gets slow, early fall. Awesome. And I had built a reputation in Charlotte, and I was absolutely afraid to, I'm not a big fan of like, afraid to fail. Yeah. Like, I absolutely think we should not fail. People should stop failing. It's a terribly bad thing to teach people to fail. I'm a firm believer in like, don't fail at all. How about that? Yeah, like the whole like, fail fast.
Yeah.
My thing, just don't fail at all.
Get it right.
and we talked an incredibly big game leading into what we were doing. We used everything we got. And the biggest fear was we actually opened right a week before a competitor that was building, that had been working for a year on their space. It's my main competitor probably in the market. And he's awesome. My buddy Kevin owns it. But we kind of came in and we're just like, check us out. We've only been doing this for 2 months and we're cool and look at our brand. And mm-hmm. I was terrified just for my personal brand that we went big and I don't know, like the last thing you want to, like I want nothing to do with having a big old F on my report card. And that was probably the biggest, scariest thing. Like we had money, which was nice. We had nice space, or at least at the time we thought it was nice. I look back and I'm not sure what I was thinking, from a design standpoint, but, yeah, that's really it. We were confident, but I did not want to go out in a bad way.
It sounds like you dodged the F, so all is good.
So, okay, so good.
Now let's dive into part of that is your background in marketing, and marketing is such a huge part of being a local business.
Yeah.
So let's start talking about that. Yeah, I mean, you know, a little, whatever your sort of kind of overview is about the importance of marketing, what are sort of the key must-dos for co-working space owners? You got a lot to say in the breakout. So let's dive
all
in.
Right. No, I love talking about this stuff. So co-working already has an awareness issue. It's already a thing that people don't understand. I still have people that think we invented co-working in Charlotte. Like they are like, oh, this is your concept? I'm like, no, this is like an international thing that there's 14,000 spaces there and it's growing every year. And they're just like, what? People don't have doors? I'm like, people still have doors too. So when I think about marketing a co-working space, the hurdle of people don't even get the concept yet. And now I have to teach people that they should also, to even take a look, like, come look at us. So God, I'm trying to think where to even start. So from the way we work, and this is going to stem off people, something that I believe in. So Hugo markets people. We don't talk about really working at space. We don't talk about our availability. We don't market empty space. We market to exactly who is sitting in the space, and also how we want people to feel if they are in the space. And if you go through Hugo's Instagram or Twitter or anything, we talk a lot about the humans. Like last week we featured Quinn, and we did this for Mother's Day. That was the lead into Mother's Day. We always, for the last 3 years, we've always had a mom featured on the blog, one of our Hugo members that works and does it all. So, and the hope is that Quinn goes home, shares this post, and somebody looks at this and goes, wow, I'm a mom. I'm also an entrepreneur. I'm also a small business. Why am I not looking, like, is co-working right for me? Like, that's the kind of stuff that we need. And also, I need people to look at that and go, oh, man, Quinn gets supported by her space. That's pretty dope. Like, I need to be around those type of people that are spending time to take these amazing photos of her, to write these stories, to share that story. That's amazing. Maybe it's something I want to be a part of. Also, somebody that knows Quinn is inevitably going to interact with someone at some point, and someone's going to say, oh, I hate working in a coffee shop, or oh, working at home has me so depressed, or oh, Starbucks, it was so crowded, I couldn't get a seat. Well, why are you not co-working? There's this cool one, Hygge, I can't say the name, but I saw Quinn featured. Mm-hmm. Like we need awareness. And yep. And I'm not shy, and my members know what we're doing. We're very transparent. I love talking about our members, and they love being talked about.
Yeah.
But they understand that, and because they're such big advocates for us and we're advocates for them, they love sharing what they do and where they work. Like Quinn was so grateful to be featured, and you know, like it's our marketing too. Like that's wild and awesome. And
I think you mentioned at Juicy about telling your members stories. You were like, sometimes they've never had their story told. And
it's unbelievable.
That really connected to me. I was like, wow, right. Great point. Like we think we're using it for marketing, but it's like, no, we're sharing their journey. And so I'll put a link to your blog in the show notes. Super. It's just so well done. And it's not just your standard member profile. It's their story, journey.
Yeah. I'm going to send you back and I'll tell you, I'll follow up and I'll send you a link to one of the original, and which was, this is when we weren't really sure what we were doing. And it was the original blog post. You can't find them. They're hidden. But when we turned to realize, like, stop creating profiles, let's share stories.
Yeah.
And these are often diverge again from what people do into what their passions are. And Quinn has the cool thing is she's also at a place in life where her passions align with what she gets to do. But often we get to share somebody that's like, I don't ever talk about this because I do my job 8 to 5. But now I'm going to talk about how I have a member that raises fosters baby squirrels. Like, come on. Like, that's the coolest. Like, I don't want to talk about her job one bit. Cool. She does like consulting. Great. Now let's talk about these squirrels. And that's often something that people are afraid to talk about. They haven't. So, we build our marketing is basically building advocacy in our members and supporting our members and sharing that. That is the most important thing we spend our time doing. And I think that's often people, like our Instagram is so powerful right now, most of the time our stuff is some level of a referral. You know, we get people that say like, hey, my friend said, if I'm going to co-work, this is the only place I'm going to be. So I guess this is where I'm going to be. Like, I've had people say that to me, like the referral was so strong. So I guess I don't have a choice.
Right. Right.
And that's wild.
Instagram point, somebody, I can't remember who it was, sort of posted recently about how Instagram feeds for co-working are sort of ironically devoid of humans. And to your point, that's what we, nobody cares about the empty chair and the desk that you have for rent.
I know. Yeah. We actually draw, there is a time when it's funny because I'm pretty particular about that. And we just actually redid the website to be very photo centric. You'd be hard pressed. If it's not a picture of an easy mug, you'd be hard pressed to find a photo that is missing a human. Occasionally we have one in the mix, but I look at co-working spaces that are taking beautiful photos of their space with absolutely not a soul in them.
Yeah.
And I can't get it. You go on their website and they got giant, beautiful photos of their space with nobody sitting in them. And then their responses, and I've talked to some of them, like, well, we don't have members. And I said, you have to have a friend, somebody like that you can, like, I'd be lying if I said when we opened the new Camp North End location, we called all our members and said, hey guys, or we put a message in Slack, we're doing photos in the space. And we'd love for you to come up there.
Free pizza and beer.
We'll buy everyone lunch. I just need 5 to 10 of you. Like, I don't even need to look crowded. I just need to have some semblance of activity, some action, some energy. And that's great. And of course they showed up. They're our biggest advocates. I don't get it.
So do you have a member who's a photographer who takes these beautiful photos?
Yeah. So Julia Fay, she's was a wedding photographer, still is, but she is someone that became a member through a meetup that we host, just complimentary, and that we had a member that was doing this Tuesdays Together thing, and she came in and was like, this is cool, how do I be here? And over the course of a year, we developed a relationship where she understood our brand. She really had this. She just got it. You know, every time she took a photo for me, and it was, you know, basically in the early days, I was like, "Hey, can you just like do this for me, random one time thing?" And every time, like, "How do I just get you to do this all the time for me? Like, I don't ever want to take a photo with my iPhone. I just want you to, if you see something cool happening, just snap a picture, drop it in the Dropbox, and I'll post it one day." And then at that time, we were also working with Meg, who was doing our writing, and we were kind of disjointed. Like, I was managing Julie and Meg over here, or them basically separate. Like, I was just, "Hey, Julia, take photos. Hey, Meg, write this blog." And eventually they were just like, "Hey, Garrett, can we just talk to each other and get you out of the way?" And develop that's this cute. Relationship to actually where they're developing a joint brand that's going to launch here in the next month.
Oh, wow. But separate from what they're doing for you.
Yes. Basically inspired by the work they do.
Okay.
Julia had, because of the work she gets to do with Huga, has fell in love with product and brand marketing and wants to, she has her wedding business that does really well. And now she wants to help people tell their stories.
Like, yeah,
real
neat.
And it's so now, and I absolutely love Julia and Meg. They have become our biggest advocates. I pay them. They do their work incredibly. They always deliver. And most importantly, they embody our brand. They pay me to be at Huga. I pay them to do their job. They get and they experience every single day the work we do. And I think I'm very lucky with that. And I think it shows.
Yeah. So your blog is all, well, right. At some point, maybe there were some other articles on it, but your blog is member stories. So talk about, so back to the marketing piece. So content marketing must be a big one.
Yeah. So it's, everything is across the board. We use, that's really the main marketing we do. We talk about things and people happening within Huga. So if we write a story about Quinn, that gets a pretty long form story written by Meg, photography from Julia. That goes out on Instagram we release blogs on Friday. We tease with quotes on Instagram stories leading up to Friday, basically like, "Who are you going to meet this week?" That's usually a zoomed in photo or the person's like elbow with an easy mode or something. Mm-hmm. And kind of tease that and make it a big deal. Like, and some people are like, "Wow, you're making a real big deal about your blog." I'm like, "Well, this is a special person that we are talking about. So let's mm-hmm. make it big." That goes out Friday. Newsletter, which is not repurposed content. Meg writes for me as well, goes out on Mondays. Tuesday morning is the Facebook post. And basically, so we're recycling this content for every single channel. We don't, you know, if this, then that, post to Instagram, to Facebook, to Twitter. Like, let's actually write stuff and make sure that it's very intentional for every single channel, every social channel that we're spending time in. And the only one we really haven't dove too deep into is just the video side of it, but that's coming. But one piece of content gives us incredible legs. And we're also now at a point where we're in the newsletter matching up themes. So if we write, we'll pick this, and this newsletter's theme was magic humans. And we actually attached Quinn to DC because their stories and the work they do aligned in some way. Mm-hmm. So now we're recycling old, and DC we wrote 6 months ago.
Okay.
So we're just repurposing old content that we even, that in most cases people just bury on the blog, and I'm desperately trying to make sure we don't bury people. So yeah, that's where we spend the vast majority of our time.
Is and content then, and showcasing. You found an authentic way to do that fits with your voice, and I think that's one of the ways to be consistent, because I think when you're constantly trying to come up with content that feels not quite important or not quite relevant or, you know, just not quite there. It's hard.
Like, I can't, but I don't ever want to write something that already exists on the internet. That's a really, actually an incredible, I feel like, let's say a co-working space launches and they, and this is this, you know, I don't know how many people listen to this, but like, this will offend people, but the most egregious, like the thing I never want to see is like, why you should co-work as a blogger.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's been, you're basically littering. You are littering on the internet. You're just throwing trash out there. That everyone's written this blog. This exists. There's no way that there is a unique thought outside of like your writing style. It's just a thing that you're just trying to, it's not useful. And nobody's sitting at home going like, why should I co-work? The answer is, those people need to see somebody just like themselves in that space. And your reach will be huge if you just spend time focusing on those people. Like, and if you're new and you get a new member, talk about their story, get them in there. Like you can do this. We did this with 10 members. We started this. So, you know, if you have 10 members and you're writing something once a week or once every other week, that's months of content. So
one might write why you should co-work because they're thinking about keyword SEO. Yes. Yeah, so we go ahead and offend somebody else, but I'm interested in how you think about that. Like clearly you're focused. I'm guessing you don't, do you give keywords to your blog writers or?
Yeah, not really. No.
Okay.
No, absolutely. 100% not. As someone who owned an agency and focused heavily on SEO, that was our main business model.
Okay.
Co-working is, the cycle is awareness and then location search. People are in some way, shape or form being introduced to co-working. It's not like nobody is sitting at home. Mm-hmm. And it's just, I'm trying to think about the cycle. Like you
like
see something happens and
right,
you go,
right.
I need a co-working space. Like I just need to see one. It's not like, why should I co-work? Like people know why. The internet sucks. They're lonely. Like they're not looking for the reason. They're looking for very much the solution or at least the intro or research into the solution. The solution is, let me go look at a space. Like what is a co-working space look like?
One nearby and how far away?
Yes. And if you're as a local co-working space, like the only thing I would spend time working on is local, all local keywords, co-working in name your city, co-working near name your city. And then from there, as long as you have a local listing and lots of reviews, you'll see yourself rise up in the rankings. But you can start getting into like other stuff and we're actually working through that on the site right now, like shared workspace in Charlotte and office space in Charlotte and
more long tail.
Some long tail stuff and thinking about like, because I had somebody actually call and she was like, I Googled shared workspace. I'm like, oh, we write for that. And I had no clue. And but also people search for that. Like and there's different tools and ways to see like where you stand.
What people are
searching
for.
But we're trying the bread and butter is, you know, Charlotte NC co-working in Charlotte NC, co-working Charlotte NC. Like those generate the most traffic. They're the most targeted. They are just there. And when I think about like a blog post by, like why should I co-work? Everything's driven by authority. And if a website, you know, think about coworker.com or some of like the really well-established co-working blogs, they're just going to rank for that stuff. It's too broad. It's not local. And as a new co-working space, you have no authority to
rank on co-working, right?
To rank on that kind of stuff. Like that's just, it's not worth your time. And it's also just so generic.
So how do you integrate the local sort of, like where on your site, is it in your blog or is it just in content on other pages where you're going after the co-working Charlotte, co-working more local?
So we've actually, co-working in Charlotte was actually a pretty easy in most smaller markets, like if you build a website, get a local business listing, like google.com/mybusiness and link it to your site and get a couple of reviews, like you're just going to pop onto the first page because there's just not that many things floating around. You might have a WeWork and Industrious. You probably have some competitors, but getting to the top 10 is actually not difficult. And displaying yourself in local when there's only 8, it's really not all that difficult either. So it's unbelievable how many people forget to, one, claim their local listing and just go after that.
Let's talk about the local listing though. It's super important. Can you talk about that for a minute? Because I think that's one of my crusades as well.
I wish it's not brain surgery.
No, it's totally not. But people forget it or neglect it.
Yes. So your local listing, your website's important, and I encourage people to build a beautiful website that is engaging and do those things. But your local listing, which you have little to no control over outside of, your name, your hours, your phone number, and some text and maybe some photos if Google will allow you, also is probably your biggest asset. And the best thing about it is, and the thing that I still, I'll go check other markets, they're missing the reviews part. And this goes back to advocacy, but it's Google's, from what I can tell and the work I've done and the reason we went from 0 to 100 as fast as we did is because we got Google reviews. It is everything to just go ask your members, your biggest advocates, people that believe in your brand, that have engaged with your brand, as long as they are authentic and real, ask them to leave you reviews, period. Do it over and over and over. And I guarantee that most spaces that are sitting at the bottom or maybe don't even exist in their local search will see significant improvement if they just added 5 or 10 reviews.
And get and a process to do that over time, right? Because that's my understanding is Google doesn't want you to get 10 in May and then 0 until December.
Yeah. Well, they actually start taking, we had 114 and now we have 112, which makes me want to scream. But because we worked really hard to go after the people that we really want to leave reviews.
Yep.
Yeah. So the system for us is and actually it's in tomorrow's Slack message to the entire Huda fan is, hey, number one, things happen this week. Tacos truck on Thursday at the North location. Number two, we'd love you if you left us a Google review. Thanks. Yeah. Bye. And rather than it being this like constant barrage, like this is probably a once a quarter thing where we'll just drop it nicely. Yep. And if, 200 plus people that, a handful have already, a ton of them already done it.
Yeah.
But if 5 new people leave us reviews, that's dope.
Yep.
We do a ton of room, like outside.
Yeah.
Meeting room. Non-member meeting space. Mm-hmm. Oh my God. And the moment there, and we're pretty low, we're very affordable meeting space. And I have very, one of us, there's 3 of us on the team that will let that group in and help them. And you can tell very quickly who is going to be, they're just like, they're so grateful. They love you. Thanks for helping us. Yeah. And I'll just in front in a comment, just be like, hey, Jen, make sure we just follow up with a thank you and also ask them to leave your review. And boom, like often they, as long as we do it. And it's the funniest thing is when I ask other spaces why they don't do this. And it's just, oh, we forgot. Like it's just one more thing that they don't have a system in place. We've adopted a lot of different software and ways to stay organized. And we're always pushing on like, how can we be efficient? So we're not
efficient, but with the focus on the right things, because to your point, like there are things you can't forget. So, it doesn't matter how many right tools you have, if you're not doing the right things with them. And the Google reviews send a link right to the little pop-up. And so it just makes it super, super easy. And I think you can default it to 5 stars.
I know, and we say, like, I'm, as someone that believes in the, it's funny, we never ask for stars. Like, we just only solicit people that are going to give us five stars.
Yep.
You know, and the worst thing about this, though, and this is something I caution people to be very ready for, is when you start soliciting reviews, be ready for bad feedback, mm-hmm. period. It's inevitable. You will be caught off guard. There's nothing worse than getting your first one-star review.
Right.
Or something.
Get under your desk.
Especially.
In a position and cry for a while.
Yeah. Like,
you'll get it together and log in and respond.
It's the worst. Like, I remember getting our first, one of our first negative ones was all the way only after we opened Camp North End. And it was someone that was just like visited for a day. Every room was either way too hot or way too cold. Mm-hmm. And we're looking at the name. We can't figure out who he is.
Yeah.
Like, who were you? And he's not wrong if he was here on this one day. We had broken air conditioning.
Oh, no.
Like, what's the chances?
Right.
And
but Google lets you, you respond. Just, you can respond to that and say, we totally get it. You're right.
it's hard. And yeah, that's about it. But yeah, spending time and your members are, again, are your biggest advocates, and they will gush about you. That's where I would focus almost all of your time. Because again, people are going to search. If you're creating good awareness and you're helping support awareness in coworking, you are going to, you want to be there when people search for coworking in your city.
And in terms of photos on the local listing, because I've heard Google doesn't so much care about the quality of the photos, but they like quantity. What is your approach there? Who takes the photos, and do you focus on people or space? Or?
Yeah. So if I could go in and delete all the photos, I would. We have actually a couple of local, like Google local reps that came through and shot a bunch of photos. I kind of hate them because we had no control.
Oh.
I'm just a control freak and I like my stuff looking good. There's a handful of photos on mine and really same with virtual tours that Google's doing. Like, my goal is to get people to get to the website and look at my very controlled environment that I created.
I remember you specifically being not recommending the virtual tour. Get people in the space, convert them there.
No.
Yeah.
Like, who knows? Like, you can stage virtual tours, but if you're in my, like, I don't know, they're expensive. And MySpace, who has evolved 10 times over the last 2.5 years? And the idea of doing something that's so incredibly static.
Right.
That I
think it's probably common, right, for a lot of us. Yeah.
Yeah. No thanks.
So in terms of when you open a new space, do you do paid digital marketing or are you focused on listing and reviews?
So for us, we're opening, we already have a nice lead pipeline, because we're opening in.
Got some pent up demand on your waiting list. And
yes, I think if we opened, as we investigate trying to figure out how to scale outside of Charlotte.
Right.
I don't for a moment think that my reputation in Charlotte's going to help me anywhere. So spending money to compete on a local level, yes, I would spend money in probably Google Ads for top search, co-working in Nashville. I'm not going to Nashville, but I think there's value in that if you can get decent enough bids. And if you're moving into a market that the competition is not too high, I bet you could probably spend, if your membership is $200 a month and you're spending $50 in acquisition, cost per acquisition, that's pretty good, especially if you can keep them around. And I would say your cost per acquisition for a keyword like that is probably in the $50 to $150 range, but you better work hard to keep those people around. But that's a scary amount of money. Like, you would have to spend
upfront, right?
That's a lot of money.
Yeah.
And sadly, most people don't know how to do, they can't afford to hire a person to do AdWords.
Right.
They're willing to drop $500. Oh, yeah. And if you set that up wrong, that's a real quick way to spend money.
Yep.
So yeah, we don't do that. What we're spending, we just started messing a little more. We did it in the beginning and we didn't get a lot of results from it. And I'm circling back around because our audience is a lot bigger and we're getting a lot more traffic. But I think Facebook retargeting is incredibly important. And we've been running it. Actually, we're running a test campaign for the last month. We've probably spent, like, I'm just running a small budget of $10 a day.
Yep.
And some days I don't even hit that, just to have us recycled, in Charlotte. The problem is, and the risky thing is, it's, we're also generating, those people are tagged because they're reading Quinn's blog and they're, So we're spending a lot of money to retarget people that are experiencing all of our content.
Right.
And I'm not yet sure if that's good or bad. We've spent $80 and we've had one member definitively come back through one of those ads. So they've spent, they signed up, they spent $124. Cool. That's worth it. And if they stay one more month, we're even better.
Yep.
I would encourage people to play with Facebook and set the budgets low and slowly ramp it up. If you see small amount of engagement, spend more money. And you can kick that up just a little bit and just to get more exposure. I'm just about, we just got a whole new round of photography and we're pretty close to toying with a lot of testing, a lot of different kind of average, a lot of different photography. And I really want to go after Instagram story ads for fun. Because I think people are spending a lot of time. I spend majority of my time on Instagram and stories.
Yeah.
So I think if we do the right stuff and it again, it's just awareness. Cause I don't think people are, I never believe people are just like sitting around and I'm like co-working. Oh, co-working story. Yay. Now I'm going to co-work. But I think we can be memorable. So the day that they need.
Right. Which is the difference between Facebook and Google, right? So you're doing, well, if you do a retargeting ad, then you're hitting somebody who's familiar with you because they've been on your website. So they know of you. So it's a little bit of a branding play versus an active search play, which is Google. But I agree with you. It feels riskier and easier to spend a lot of money quickly on Google. And it can depend on your market, how expensive it is. In some markets, it's less expensive and some it's a lot more. Depends on what the competition is spending. And so it can be a little tricky. And to your point, I mean, you've run an agency. It's just most of them, you know, your budget's too small. The retainer's more than, you know, what you're going to spend on ads to get somebody to work on your stuff.
Yeah. Like I'm looking at Coworking Charlotte and I'm looking at WeWork sitting at the top because they have unlimited money. You have Level, which is also a national brand.
Yeah.
They also, it's funny. Man, that's some interesting stuff, man. I can nerd out about, ads and stuff. So this is super nerdy, but so WeWork is the number one spot. They're bidding the most. Level, which is another national brand, is bidding right below them, but their target, their URL is how we work. so they're basically, that is a marketing, like, oh, we're going to subliminally draw people up straight down and to associate with them, then Industrious and then B&A Cowork right there. And then in local, we are number one in local search, 112 reviews with Advent at 46 second. So when I think about this, like, I'm not someone that ever clicks on ads. And I think the local listing section is so eye-catching and those stars are so eye-catching that if I could spend all my time there, that's where I would be.
Doing that 112.
then you look at, like, right in the first listing, you have the complete list, pricing, and map of Chart 11 co-working spaces. So that's Charlotte Agenda. That's our top local news kind of publication. They're amazing. We're number two on their list. So if people click that, they're our number one referral traffic. And you have Advent and co-working and us right there from an organic search. So within the first half of that page, there are three ways to engage with my brand. None of which is paid.
Paid, right. Yep.
And I think we would only, nobody's picking the first choice. They're hitting command, you know, command click. So all these tabs are opening. Click on WeWork, click on Advent, click on Hygge. And eventually they're going to go, which one makes me feel good?
Yep.
Or they're going to tort all of them.
Mm-hmm.
The amount of people that do.
Yeah, right. Or the ones that are closest.
Yeah. And for us, like, that's where I spend my time. Like, I just need to get them to the site. And we just launched a new site. And the response is, we've had more conversions in the last 2 weeks than we've had. And it's because of the site.
What on the site? We're talking about marketing. You have to tell us.
Sure. We've had Julia taking photography, you know, doing photos for the last year at stocks, like folders and folders of beautiful images that we were just underutilizing.
Yeah.
So the site gets completely redone with all her work. And there's still a little bit more still to update. We go hugely overboard with the human centric stuff.
Yeah.
So every photo is heavy on two things. We're people and we're easy mugs. Like, this is our brand. That first shot, it's something I'm actually, I don't know if you go to the website. That first shot, then that's Erica sitting at a table. That's a candid shot too, which is super exciting to me.
Yeah.
My favorite thing about this, and I get it, some people are like in marketing are like, why don't you show more people working? And I said, I think that's manufactured. People can tell there's other people that work in that space. There's something, this photo speaks to everyone. People that are like, I don't want to be too close to people. Good. There's nobody next there.
Mm-hmm.
People that are interested in having a community can clearly tell that there's other people working at this table.
Yep.
It doesn't feel crowded. It is, when I got this photo, I was like, this is our photo. And the full version has like our quote wall in the back. That you can't see because of cropping and browser sizes. But I love this freaking photo. And then the most important thing was, how do we just get people where they need to be as fast? People come to us for membership, meeting space, or the studio.
Yeah.
And I don't want to talk about anything else. Like, we were spending so much time having people navigate around to get where they need to be.
Yep.
And I just, why are you here? And I am here because I need a co-working space and I'm looking for membership. Cool. And then let's just drive people to that as fast as possible. So having those things, cool. Join the family. My options are flex, dedicated, and private office space. Cool. Here's some FAQs, which are actually fleshing out now. Here are your membership things. Good. Let's go convert. How do we get people to get in the door as fast as possible? And never once, like, when I go on websites, they're like, we have no offices available. Like, why would you write that on your website?
Yep.
Why would you? Well, you're basically telling people
tell
to go away.
Well, they've toured and they've gotten on your waiting list.
Like, you know how many people come in? The amount of people that come in for offices and just stay as Flex members is unbelievable.
Yeah. Well, we have a policy. You have to be a member in order to get top priority on the waiting list. And so,
genius.
Right. Totally.
We say that to everyone. Basically, people are like, what's the waiting list like? I'm like, we always will prioritize a member. Like, if you're a Flex member and an office opens and you just happen to decide today and there were 10 people on the outside waiting list, you instantly become number one.
Yep.
And people are like, oh, okay. And then the amount of people that become members and never go into an office because they realize how awesome it is. Like, why would I spend $600 when I can spend $124 and do the same job?
Yep.
Like, light bulb. I love it. But yeah. So the website, it's focused on getting people to the endpoint as fast as possible.
What was the driver to update it? Did you know that it could be better or?
Yeah. So my background pre-marketing is actually in web design development. And working on your own brand is the hardest thing ever from a web dev standpoint.
Okay.
I struggled for 2 years. I let the site sit exactly how it was when we launched it pretty much. And it was really just a lack of direction. And then just spark of inspiration one weekend, put it in front of Brittany who works with me now. And was like, this is it. And it just needed to be done. And I would say we're working on big new things, and this is stuff that nobody would know, but we, in our brand, you can see we have two G's, which we use a lot when we need abbreviated, mm-hmm. Our abbreviated logo is just the double G.
Yeah.
The double G is awesome, and we became very well known for it, but the double G says nothing if you don't know our brand. Mm-hmm. So we are along with the new website was meant to reintroduce people back to a full brand. And this is a strategic, we're working on a lot of new things, new projects, new events. We just won an NC Idea grant. As we think about more locations, I want people to see Huga. So we're going to go back hard to, hey, it's pronounced Huga Coworking. Okay. This is our brand, HYGGE. And we're going to probably go hard with that for another 6 to 8 months. And then we'll bring back the double G as this, like, oh, now you know us again. So mm-hmm. double G, double G, double G, double G. And that's just, it kind of all just came together. And I got inspired and decided to give us a fresh new look one weekend. And this was nice. Just a weekend project.
Right. Yes. The rest of us cannot make that happen. Yeah. Website refreshes are a major undertaking, and finding the totally. Right group and hiring. And yeah. If you were to give, we kind of talked about this at the conference a little bit, and wanting space owners without a marketing background to, what resources would you give non-marketing space owners, or what would you tell them are sort of the few, like, just key things they need to pay attention to and get right?
Sure. So I think, I think in a world where, you know, even we're up at Juicy and I meet a lot of spaces, when I think about what makes you memorable, the thing is not going to be chairs, internet, and your amenities. we all do it. It better be good when I become a member, but at the end of the day, the thing that makes us unique is not, because it's not unique. We all do chairs, we all have Flex memberships, we all have dedicated desks, we have offices. Like, what, how do you stand out in a world where everyone is calling themselves trendy, like kind of cliche, like inspirational words and things like that? We are, they love like in kind of industrial words, like the refinery or industrious or industry co-working is one in Charlotte. And I love Tyler who runs it, but the name it does nothing to be memorable. So from a brand standpoint, if you're developing a brand or you're thinking about it, how do you stand out? How do you quickly be the Huga sitting in a world where your people are just picking a bunch of nouns or like action verbs, like thrive coworking.
Yeah.
I understand why they choose thrive to be like, you know, evoke this mm-hmm. feeling. But I think it's, there's too many spaces doing so much of the similar stuff. And I just think it's interesting. Outside of that, again, we talked a lot about local.
Local listing can make
an impact. Your website and your local listing are so important. And websites can be time consuming and very expensive. But I'm a Squarespace site, a beautiful Squarespace template. Like Squarespace gets it right. Like I'm not a huge fan because I believe that they, you know, I have the ability to do it myself. So I'm a little, mm-hmm. I'm over here going, oh, I make it all easy. But a Squarespace site with beautiful photography, like get real people to take photos of your space. And that is not expensive, and build a Squarespace site. Just drop beautiful imagery in, pick the fonts already, make it easy. And I see actually, we're working on some software stuff for coworking spaces. And I look at a lot of coworking spaces that are up and coming, and I follow the Google alerts who's opening, and I very often I find that new coworking spaces are building Squarespace and Wix sites that have beautiful templates with them, which is so awesome. At least they're doing something right to make their brand look beautiful.
Yeah.
But just pay the respect, like be proud of it. There's, family. There are affordable ways to make that happen. There are plenty of, and I'm weird about bartering, but I have no doubt.
I'm anti-bartering as young, well.
I just believe in getting paid for the work you do,
yeah.
Especially as a services professional.
Everybody wins. Yep.
But there is, if you have local institutions that are looking for, like there's a nonprofit in Charlotte called something create, man, I'm drawing a blank. It's all about teaching kids how to leverage photography and basically teaching them to be photographers. This is this cool nonprofit that helps underserved communities. They did some work at Huga, and that guy said to me, like, anytime you need these kids, so like they're talented and they just need
projects.
They need work because they need projects. Like, you want to like reach out to your local institutions. Like, you'd be surprised at how many people are just looking to be a part of something versus going like, hey, Duncan, who's a professional photographer, like, I'd love to trade you a membership at a space you don't need, but please. And where maybe you could go support like a cool local thing looking, I don't know, like maybe look for alternative ways. That's all. Mm-hmm. Maybe you don't need to spend money, but you can have a cool story where you supported you know, some kid that's learning to, and it's 100 times better than you were ever going to do with your iPhone. So.
With your, right. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
last thing I'll say.
Yeah.
Don't be afraid to reach out to other co-working spaces outside of your city. I've spent the last 6 to 8 months making friends all over the US and in Canada. And I just made a new friend in Malaysia, who is awesome and has a new space. And it's probably one of the best conversations I've had. And I don't have all the answers. I'm looking to find a community that is kind of pushing the line. And the community outside of, like, because there's no competition. I have no competition with anyone outside of Charlotte, period.
Right.
You know, within Charlotte, a little competition. It's kind of, you know, we are competitors, but
still friendly.
The community,
but you're not going to tell them all your secrets. Yeah.
The community outside of the city, and especially Canada and some of the European countries, have been like the coolest people I've ever met. They're amazing. And they are there to help. Like, they are happy to, they're almost like, thank God, a friend like that. Because our industry is so small.
Mm-hmm.
I can go make 100 marketing friends tonight. Like 100 co-working friends. Like, that could, it's taken me a year to make 15 great ones.
Yep.
But they are so helpful in that community. You know, look at all the co-working leadership Slacks, all the podcasts, you know, the Google groups.
Yep. Right. People are so willing to give, and to your point, especially when they're not in your city, they want you to be successful. They want to share and, you know, tell you what's working and what they're working on. And yeah, it's an amazing community when you tap into it.
Yeah. And it's just spend time. And I'm a firm believer in I don't want to say like I'm successful. Like, I have successful co-working spaces. I still believe we have tons to learn, and we're a hot mess at times. but I try to give back as I know, right? Holy moly. I try to give back as much, if not more than I possibly take out of it. Like, how do I be known as, you know, when we were at the co-working conference, like, that was the most exciting thing for me. Like, Brittany, who was there with me, she does ops for Google. She was like, you're getting real excited there. I'm like, I could talk about this stuff all freaking day.
Right. With an audience
who
really wants to hear it. Yeah, totally. Like,
they would have just, everyone in that room would have just sat there and gushed
sure,
about
hours.
Marketing.
Right. Yes.
Hours. Like,
yep.
And that's what I want. Like, how do I do, like, I want to do that all the time. And if that's what I got to do and sit on the Slack groups and share this stuff and write blogs on mugs.gray, mm-hmm. like, that's what I'm going to do. So
what are your favorite ways for people to find you and learn more about you and Huga?
I'm a big fan of Twitter. I love Twitter. At Garrett Tishy on Twitter, at Huga CLT on every other platform. My email is garrett@wearehuga.com. Email me anything and everything. I have the blog mugs.gripe, which is, I'm due for a blog post. And my friend is editing it. So fun fact, I don't write well. I tend to just ramble my thoughts and somebody makes them cohesive.
Lena, what is the blog? Say it one more time.
It's mugs. The domain is mugs.gripe.
No.
and it's called Please Wash Your Mugs.
Oh, and, nice.
Really just meant to be an outlet for me to, like, I have like 13 blog posts that are just sitting in a Google Doc right now that I've written. And it's every time I have some sort of thought or something happens and I'm just like, somebody would appreciate if I write about this right now mm-hmm. and share it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I wrote a whole tell-all about like how the podcast studio benefits us and what it costs to do it. And here's all the equipment.
Wait, like, is that posted? I got nothing to lose. Or is it in your Google Drive still? Okay.
No.
Check
it out. I think I have like, I don't know, 9 or 10 stories up there. I'm waiting for the next edit. I feel like I'm very behind. I got 8 up there. I know I haven't posted since Juicy. But
very nice.
And that stresses me out. But yeah, meant to be just this outlet for me to share things.
Cool. We'll link to it in the show notes and all of your other Twitters and all that good stuff. I wrote them all down as you were going through them. So we'll put them in the show notes and
the last thing, God, we've been talking a long time. So about a year ago, we started working on, and this is something that stems from, and this is something that I struggle to talk about because I believe that there's too many people trying to sell people things. So my buddies, Sean, Mike, and I started working on software for managed co-working spaces about a year ago. It's called Simple. Something that I encourage people to do, and this is something that if I could go back, I would change because it was probably the worst part of running co-working space. No matter what you do, your systems and your processes are so important. And the, you know, at 35 years old with a family and 3 locations and a small, we're only 2 full-time people. We don't have community managers. I encourage you to invest in taking your time back, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
I was manually charging. I was up to 100 members and I was manually hitting the charge button every single month. And if I could go back and just go, Garrett, spend the money, get Cobot or Nexidus or Proximity, do something. And, you know, we're working on Simple. I'm super damn excited about it and we're using it. And check it out. But if someone's listening to this and they're going like, I don't use software yet. That's crazy. I don't care how many members you have, get something to automatically bill and handle all your members. Just do it. It's like life-saving when you're not chasing people down for money, credit cards.
Right. Yep.
On the first of the month to just get a bunch of invoices paid is just the most glorious feeling that you just, and it's worth 2.9%, the cost of doing business. So.
Right. Wait, what is the website? S-I-M-P-L?
It's S-M-P-L.io.
Oh, okay. I'm glad
and that's
I asked.
Kind of
good.
Our, yeah, no vowels.
So is it S-M-P-L.io. Live? Is it open to the marketplace?
Yeah.
Still, okay.
We went live like... right at the beginning of the year and we're plugging away. It's actually the most, it's really weird to build something, to be a founder in something and also be its best, like I'm its best customer.
Yep.
So, but yeah, we got a whole handful of spaces using it. It's kind of the most interesting. It's just cool to build something and actually watch spaces use it. Like and the hope is that we with Simple and basically everyone that comes in, like the space in Malaysia came in because of this. And now he's like my buddy and we're mm-hmm. like, you know, the hope is that I just kind of get to build a whole co-working community. And this is just one other outlet for people to get introduced to it.
Yeah.
But I also am a firm believer that everyone needs to pick exactly what's right for them. And I used Cobot for a long time. Habu's out there in Proximity, and there's a lot of them for everyone.
Yep.
So, oh my God. So, we're doing something very specifically and lowering the bar, but check them all out. Please don't use nothing. That's crazy.
Yeah. That's I love it. Good. Well, yeah, no, I'm glad you mentioned it. Absolutely. You should talk about it. I put the link in the show notes for that as well. So yeah, simple.io.
Cool.
And I will take a look at it and learn more about it too. Cause with my GWA hat on, we're always interested in making sure everybody knows about what's available out there. So excited to see another offering, because the market is still pretty young. I said this to somebody earlier today. It's like anybody who's doing software has only been doing it for co-working for, you know, a handful of years. It's not like somebody got it, nailed it, because they've been doing it for 20. Not yet.
There's a surprisingly large amount of people that, large amount of companies that had something and went, cool, now just put a landing page, do a couple tweaks so it's like focused on co-working, but it's really not. We missed the boat because we don't actually know what co-working is. It's just clearly a vertical we should be in. So it's good to see that there are, you know, us, Habu, Cobot, obviously, and Nexodus. And I think even Nexodus is a vertical that it's competitor, I guess. It's probably the most full-featured, but and probably the one that's been around the longest, but I'm not sure they hit the mark as well. I think there's so much room here. And when you look at the projection, you're talking 14,000 co-working spaces now, 20,000 by 2020. Right? If I can play a small part in helping new spaces, like that's our market right now, is how do I get spaces to not opt for zero software by lowering the bar to free or $2 a member.
Yep.
Like if you're not paying for software until you're making money. That was my biggest thing. Like we look at Nexodus and you're just like, oh my God, like I'm so scared to spend this $50 a month. And I wish I could go back and smack myself.
Right. The biggest advice you give to a new operator. Awesome. I have the link in the show notes for folks to check out. And thank you for sharing that piece of your story, for, you know, kind of sharing your origin story and the things that are important from your perspective in the realm of marketing. Super helpful. And hopefully a few people have some good takeaways from this. And I will, like I said, put all your contact info in the show notes so folks can reach out if they're curious to follow, and for sure follow all the Huga platforms because they're doing some amazing content work. So
thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah, well, I appreciate your time. Thank you again for doing this today.
Thanks, James.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of Everything Coworking. Be sure to click the subscribe button so you can stay up to date on the latest trends and how-tos. Until next time.